How, with the angle of the moon and the fog, the soldiers in the warship Somerset could not see us crossing below, replied Paul. Where are you heading now? I asked. I'm following Dr. Warren's plan. First, I have to let the people in the countryside know about the king's soldiers coming. They'll need to get ready and armed to protect themselves. Well, what happens if they don't have time to get ready? Cam asked Paul. If the people are caught off guard, the regulars will come in, capture our Patriot leaders, and take all of our gunpowder, Paul said, adjusting his saddle. The Patriots in Charlestown saw the two lanterns signal the Old North Church across the river and knew it was time. I'm thankful to Deacon Larkin for getting this wonderful horse called Brown Beauty ready for the ride. Liberty perked up at her name, turned his head toward her. Without her, I wouldn't be able to get there in time, Paul said, pulling Brown Beauty's saddle tight. Now we have to start riding, because the King's soldiers are heading this way. I have to arrive in Lexington before they do. John Hancock and Samuel Adams must be warned, so let's go. Godspeed, Paul. We'll follow behind, helping to spread the alarm, I said, watching Paul mount his horse and race off. I turned around to see Liberty's jaw hanging wide open. You okay, I asked, snapping my fingers multiple times in front of his face. Huh? Oh, I am more than okay. I am F-I-N-E fine. And speaking of fine, did you see Paul Revere's horse? Dreamy! Liberty was obviously bitten by the love bug. Oh, geez, Cam said, rolling his eyes. Liberty, focus. I need you to focus, I said, clapping my hands by Liberty's ear. Hurry! We have to chase after Paul Revere. He can't get too far ahead. Now, there are too many of us to ride on Liberty, so we need another horse. Where can we find a horse in the middle of night? Liberty's nose twitched as he sniffed the air. Well, I sense a horse near that yard over there. He's right, Tommy said, almost a little too loud. I see it right there. Tommy pointed to a field surrounded by a wooden fence. Under the moonlight, only 20 yards away, stood a very short, pudgy pony. His light blonde mane was choppy like a bad haircut, and his hooves looked too big for his legs. Even from this distance, the pony stared at us like a puppy that wanted to play. Ah, what luck! We'll borrow the pony and return him later, I said. Are you kidding me? Said Cam. No, 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 no. I've had stuffed animals bigger than that thing. This is not going to work. I second that for the horse record. Just saying, Liberty exclaimed. There's a horse record? Tommy said, distracted by Liberty's commentary. Do not be fooled by appearances, I said, trying to be reassuring. That pony may not be as fast as a horse, but I'd hang on tight if I were you. Now hurry, I urged. We don't want to miss our opportunity to ride with Paul Revere. Cam moaned as Tommy ran over to the fence. Cam, Liberty, and I followed, as Tommy quickly dislodged two of the wooden beams and led the pony out of the field and onto the dirt road. It looked like Cam was taller than the pony. You're killing me, said Cam, sighing. The pony trotted over to Liberty and looked straight up, like a little brother idolizing his big brother. Liberty rolled his eyes and said, wonderful, I have a sidekick. Tommy smiled and said, hey, standing side by side, the two of you could be like Batman and Robin. Liberty gave a courtesy laugh. Yeah, ha ha, except Robin didn't drool, and he wore a cool mask. Seriously, I think that thing would look better with a mask. What are you talking about? He kind of looks like you, Liberty, Tommy teased. Just a little smaller. Maybe we could call him Little Liberty. Cam doubled over laughing, pointing at Liberty. Oh, man, he got you, Liberty. He looks nothing like me. I take offense at that, Liberty said, casually glancing at Little Liberty. Little Liberty looked up with great affection at his new big brother. All right, you three and Little Liberty, come on. We need to hurry and catch up to Paul Revere and Brown Beauty, I said, amused by Liberty's obvious annoyance. Now you're talking. That filly is my kind of lady, Liberty said, the lovesick twinkle returning to his eyes. Go ahead, Mr. Revere, said Tommy. We'll catch up. Yeah, we should be there in a couple hundred years, Cam moaned again. Reluctantly, I agreed. All right, but we won't get too far ahead. I'll be looking back often. If we ever get separated, remember the code word Hancock Clark House. That's our meeting place in Lexington. Wait, what? Cam asked. I got it, Tommy confirmed. The Han Clark Lock House in Coxington. Kidding? Just kidding, Tommy smiled, the usual prankster. The Hancock Clark House in Lexington. I have it, really. I smiled, relieved. Good luck, I said. I was nervous for the boys, but knew we wouldn't be far behind. Liberty, can you do something to encourage the pony and make sure he follows toward Lexington? Liberty whinnied at Little Liberty and stomped his left foot 3 times. Little Liberty whinnied back and nodded his head. I get the vibe he takes these roads a lot with his owner. He seems to know exactly where he's going, said Liberty. All right, then. Well, let's go. I waved at the boys and then turned northward as Liberty started off after Paul Revere and Brown Beauty. Cam called out, can't be any worse than getting inoculated for smallpox, his words trailing off into the distance. I reassured myself that they would be fine. Up ahead, dark shadows filled the road. The night air was crisp and cold as we raced along. I'm sure Brown Beauty is fast, but you're rocket fast tonight, I said. Liberty panted deeply. Remember, I'm not an ordinary horse. That's true, I thought. Liberty was anything but ordinary. The trees went by in a blur, the fields in blotches of blackness. It felt a little like riding the roller coaster Space Mountain at Disneyland. It was around midnight when we saw Paul Revere and Brown Beauty again. They had slowed in front of a small house along the road. A man about my age listened intently as Paul warned, "Hear ye! The regulars are coming out. They travel up the road from Boston. Let everyone know. Protect yourselves." Immediately, Paul raced off into the dead of night. The man yelled back, "We thank you, and we'll be ready. I'll spread the word, and we will send more riders to alarm the other towns." The man raced back into his house. Through the window, I could see him take his musket off the wall as his wife tried to comfort their crying baby. I was amazed by the response of this colonist. I knew there was more than one rider, but I did not know that riders fanned out from every village. It was incredible. "Well, what are we waiting for?" asked Liberty. "Brown Beauty, Paul Revere's getting away." I turned around in the saddle and looked back to see if I could spot Cam and Tommy. And amazingly, Little Liberty was plodding along. He was only back a few hundred yards, pushing as fast as his little legs could go, with Tommy and Cam gently bumping up and down. "Well, let's go, Liberty," I said. We quickly resumed the chase into the middle of the night. Every so often, the moon would peek out from behind the tall trees, the thin moon rays giving off just enough light to help us see the rough outline of the surrounding countryside. As we raced along, village after village showed similar signs of being warned by Paul Revere. Bells rang. People were awake and quickly moving around. I was just about to ask Liberty if he knew how far we were from Paul Revere when I saw a faint image of a rider up ahead. "Liberty, that must be them just up ahead," I said, leaning over Liberty's neck. "Come on, hurry, let's catch up." As we got closer, we saw that Paul Revere and Brown Beauty had come to a stop and were waiting under the cover of a tree. "Rush, we have to go north, a different route than we intended," Paul said, pointing in the opposite direction. "We'll lose a little time, but rumor is there are redcoats up ahead patrolling the roadway." I pulled out a map to find out where we were. "Will we go up this way, through Mystic?" I said, pointing to the area on the map. It was hard to see the route in the light, but Paul confirmed, "Yes, we will go through Mystic, over the wooden bridge." And just then, I heard the sound of horse hooves getting closer. I turned back to see
Little Liberty, still in the distance, but running as fast as his little legs could take him. It was quite the sight to see the boys' heads bouncing up and down trying to hold on. "Oh, great. The runt returns," sighed Liberty, grunting under his breath. "Let's carry on, onward, north towards Lexington," Paul said, starting to ride off ahead. "We will be right behind you," I said. We rode through village after village and heard shouts of redcoats coming, and hurry up. Bells were ringing all the way until we galloped over a small rising hill onto the outskirts of Lexington. "We're almost there," Paul Revere said. "The Hancock Clark House is just up ahead, and we can warn Hancock and Adams." Liberty slowed to a trot as we approached a local tavern on the right with a bright red door. The sign overhead read, "Buckman Tavern." "Let's wait here for the boys. They'll be here soon," I said, my heart racing from the excitement. A small lantern glowed in the window, and a few voices could be heard inside talking and laughing. To the left was a large field about the size of a small city park. "Now, this must be Lexington Green," I thought. Several houses surrounded the field. It seemed like years, but it was only a matter of minutes until Little Liberty trotted along to the tavern. I was glad to see the boys were still on his back. It didn't take us long to catch up to them and take the lead again. "Follow us, boys. We are very close now," I said. "You do realize this is completely ruining my horse mojo, right? I mean, the runt's rather embarrassing. Tell me you disagree," Liberty said in a huff. I ignored him to focus on the task at hand. We rounded another bend and saw Paul Revere and Brown Beauty stopped in front of a two-story wood house lined with big trees. The house was dark except for the flicker of a lamplight. A guard stood outside with a rifle on his chest. "Just stop right there," the guard said in a loud whisper. "Don't move a step closer if you know what's good for you." He stood right in front of the door like it was the entrance to a treasure room. "But I need to alarm Hancock and Adams," Paul Revere urged, spreading his chest wide. He looked about ready to explode. "Quiet down immediately, sir, I warn you, so help me," the guard said menacingly. "Quiet down, you're about to wake the house with all this noise." Brown Beauty, sweaty from head to hoof, sidestepped nervously, nostrils flaring. "Noise?" Paul responded in his loudest voice. "Noise? You'll have noise enough before long. The regulars are coming out." At that, the guard's eyes widened, and then he turned and immediately knocked loudly on the door again and again. The bedroom curtain jerked open, then another and another. Several shadowed faces peered out into the darkness. Within a matter of seconds, a man came to the door. He was dressed like he was going to a grand ball or an 18th-century Academy Award show. The man said, "Paul Revere, what is going on?" His eyes were half closed and his hair was disheveled. But he had a way about him, a surprising casualness. This was not Samuel Adams. Last time we saw Adams, he was throwing tea into the water at Boston Harbor. "Oh, of course, this must be John Hancock." After asking Liberty to keep a lookout outside, we all pushed inside to the narrow hallway where a candle flickered. Paul responded, "You are in grave danger, sir. The redcoats have crossed the Charles River and are coming to get you and Sam Adams." John Hancock turned and looked at me in the eyes. He appeared surprised, but quickly recovered, nodded to me, and led us further into the house. Samuel Adams was standing in the middle of the room with his hands on his hips. He looked grumpy. Paul Revere introduced us to the others and said, "This is fellow patriot Rush Revere and his two students, Tommy and Cam." "Well, speak, Paul. We don't have all night. What is this? Something about the redcoats coming tonight? You're joking." "This is madness," said Samuel. Cam jumped up with boldness and said, "He's not joking. Paul Revere is telling the truth." Samuel grabbed Cam by the shoulders and said, "Now this is a brave young man. Finally, someone answered my blessed question." Samuel actually smiled, looking at Cam, who looked at me confused. John Hancock was casually leaning against a book cabinet. He laughed and raised a hand gently to say, "Well, we must be very, very special indeed for all these soldiers to come after the two of us on this fine evening." Samuel shouted. It's no laughing matter, Hancock. The revolution's beginning. We have to get moving, right away. Paul looked at the others and said, Dr. Warren thinks they plan to capture you and then move on to Concord and take the gunpowder and the ammunition stores. Gunpowder is something we need. We can't produce it here. Without it, we are doomed to fail. General Gage knows this. He's sending the king's soldiers to take the ammunition or worse. Yes, it makes sense. They are marching to Concord to snuff out any remaining freedom we still have, said John Hancock. Then we must warn Concord right away, exclaimed Samuel. John sighed. And I suppose we will need to leave in the middle of the night. Gentlemen, he said, I am a patriot through and through, but I am also a man who needs a cup of tea before rising and leaving at this hour. Tommy whispered, Hey, Kim, what's up with this guy? I know, right? I mean, he's not exactly racing to get going. Come on, dude, they're going to hang you, Cam responded. I pulled the boys aside while the others talked. Don't underestimate John Hancock, I told them. He is an incredible businessman and one of the wealthiest men in Boston. He's risking all he has for the cause. His way may be a little different, but he is a patriot and would share that fact with King George himself. Samuel Adams continued arguing for us to leave immediately until John held up a relaxed finger and silenced him. Gentlemen, patience is a virtue. Now, if you will excuse me. As John Hancock exited the room, Samuel Adams rolled his eyes and huffed. Mr. Hancock is brilliant. He's a true patriot, but there are times like this I'm ready to dump him in the Charles River. Paul Revere glanced out one of the windows and said, It's time to go, but I don't see Dawes. I'm afraid he was captured. Now, we knew the risks of this mission, that there was a real chance we wouldn't complete it. At any point we could be captured. God knows what the regulars would do to us. But it is a sacrifice we are willing to make. Still, I worry about him. What about your family, Cam asked. You have any children? I can tell you this, Paul said, softly putting his hand on Cam's shoulder. I do what I do because of my family. I want my children to live in a free country. I want them to have a choice to become anything they want to become and believe in God. I don't want a king or a government to control them. Cam furrowed his brow and said, You know there's a chance your kids don't understand why you're not around, right? I do, but I'm doing this for them. They may not understand, but I'm fighting for their futures, for their freedom. Cam looked up at Paul with soft eyes. Something's happening outside, Tommy said. It's Dawes, Paul said, relieved. He made it across Boston Neck. We all rushed outside to meet William Dawes and prepare for our next journey to warn Concord. As we walked down the steps, I saw Liberty looking deep into Brown Beauty's eyes. Liberty seemed very happy and completely in his own world. Now I understood why he didn't give me a usual sarcastic comment when I asked him to wait outside. He was eager to make a friend. We need someone to stay here and be a lookout while Hancock and Adams get ready, Paul said, looking at the group. I'll do it. I'm on it, Tommy exclaimed. I was torn. I didn't want to leave him alone, but knew this could be a once-in-a-lifetime learning experience for him. Reluctantly, I said, Tommy, you can stay here so long as you do not leave the Hancock Clark House. British soldiers are patrolling the roads tonight. It's too dangerous to be out and about. Very serious, I said nervously. Yep, got it. 100% I will stay right here. I'll be the lookout commando from the window. I'm good at this. I play it all the time in my backyard fort. Tommy was pumped up like he was about starting a football game. Well, what am I going to do, Mr. Revere? Cam asked. I want you to come to Concord with Paul Revere and me, I replied. Am I riding on Little Liberty? Cam eagerly continued. Liberty looked away from his conversation with Brown Beauty for a second to glare my way and shake his head. Nope, this time you can ride on Liberty with me, I said. Whew, Cam says. I'm moving up from coach to first class. I'm sure Liberty was desperate to say something, but he restrained himself. "Okay, Cam, let's go say goodbye to Samuel Adams and John Hancock," I said. Paul Revere and Brown Beauty, Dawes and his sturdy mare, and Cam, Liberty, and I left Lexington and headed west to Concord. We were on the road only for a couple of miles when we were overtaken by another man on a horse. He was a handsome young gentleman, richly dressed and mounted on an impressive stallion. The man rode up between us and said, "Good evening, sirs." He glanced at his pocket watch. "Or I guess I should say good morning, since it's nearly 1 o'clock. My name is Dr. Samuel Prescott. I heard from some people down the road that you are headed to Concord to warn them to hide the town's gunpowder and weapons." "And what are you doing out at 1 o'clock in the morning?" Paul asked, suspicious. He went on to interrogate Dr. Prescott for a bit and found him to be a true patriot. We also found out he was visiting his fiancée, was originally from Concord. Dr. Prescott's knowledge of the town would likely come in handy. We rode into the early morning. Despite the late hour, Cam was wide awake and full of energy. Suddenly we heard Paul Revere shout, "Regulars!" "Where?" shouted Dawes, pulling hard on his horse. Prescott turned his horse sideways, skillfully. Paul warned, "There are regular soldiers on horses lurking up ahead under the tree. It's an ambush." "Well, what should we do?" I asked. "I propose we attack," urged Paul boldly. "Are you with me?" The other men instantly agreed, and without further discussion, we raced forward. The moonlight shone brightly, and the tall trees near the road created ghostly moon shadows. The road curved up ahead, and beyond the bend, there were even more British soldiers on horseback. One of the British soldiers shouted, "Stop! If you go an inch farther, you are dead." We had no chance to fight them. We were outnumbered. Chapter 5. The British soldiers completely blocked the road now. There was no way through. "You there, stop! Any further and you are a dead man," shouted a tall British redcoat, pointing his pistol in our direction. The British soldiers wore full-dress uniforms with swords and pistols in their hands. They had positioned their horses to block, but Brown Beauty and Paul Revere raced forward into them. The road narrowed where the redcoats waited. It was the perfect spot to prevent us from passing. Liberty slowed and asked, "What's our plan, Captain?" I replied, "I'm not exactly sure what happens next, but..."
"Wait, what?"
interrupted Liberty. "You're supposed to be the history expert. What do you mean you're not sure?"
"I'm thinking I should have stayed back with Tommy," Cam said.
The British soldiers were all around us. Liberty and Brown Beauty whinnied and whirled as if they were standing in a pit of vipers. "I don't think we're going to get out of this one, Mr. Revere," Cam said in a panic, searching desperately for a way out. Suddenly, Dr. Prescott shouted, "Put on!" I guess that's Yankee language for "get going," because the next second, Dr. Prescott and his stallion sprinted left toward a low stone wall. Paul Revere and Brown Beauty sprinted right toward a grove of trees at the far end of the pasture, and William Dawes and his horse darted in a third direction toward a nearby farm. "Hang on, Cam," I yelled, urging Liberty forward. Liberty joined Brown Beauty as both horses shot off across the moonlit pasture like cats running from firecrackers. "Do you see Dr. Prescott or William Dawes? Did they escape?" I yelled to Cam, who was holding on tight. "I think so," Cam replied, breathing heavy. "That doctor dude and his horse jumped super high over that huge stone wall, and the British couldn't do it." Paul Revere rode a few feet in front of us. We made it through the undergrowth and lunged into the tree line of the nearby woods. Wet ice and mud flew up under Liberty's hooves, and suddenly he slowed. "It's a trap," warned Liberty, breathing hard. "What do you mean?" I asked. "I'm not sure," Liberty panted. "This doesn't feel right." In a flash, six redcoats appeared from among the trees. Their horses prodded the ground and snorted as if they were revving their engines. 10 of them now surrounded us. Paul Revere and Brown Beauty came to a halt, and we stopped right beside them.
"Get off your horses or we'll blow your brains out," yelled an officer. He scowled and pointed his pistol at Paul's head and grabbed Brown Beauty. Another pointed his gun at my head. It was so close I could see down the barrel. Cam slipped off the back of Liberty and I dismounted too. The redcoats didn't wait for Paul to dismount. Instead, they yanked him from the saddle and pulled him to the ground. A redcoat kicked him in the ribs. Paul grunted as another boot kicked him from the other side. Cam started forward to help, but I held him back. "Let me go, Mr. Revere. We need to stop this. They're hurting Paul." I didn't know what to do. Luckily, I didn't have to intervene. The British commanding officer quickly shouted, "Leave him! We are not savages! Put this gentleman with the others!" Two redcoats lifted Paul by his arms. Everything was dark around us. Paul cringed as they touched him. His face and clothes were drenched with mud and ice. The redcoats pulled and dragged him over to where Cam and I stood with... I searched left and right, and "Where's Liberty?" I softly asked Cam. He looked just as surprised as I was. "He must have held his breath and disappeared when we were watching the redcoats grab Paul Revere," said Cam. The commanding British officer approached Paul and asked in a gruff voice, "What is your name?" Paul Revere stood tall, squared his shoulders to the officer. With a penetrating stare, he replied with authority, "My name is Revere." "What?" asked the officer, taking a step backward. "Paul Revere? The Paul Revere?" His look of surprise turned into jubilation, as if he had just caught the most wanted man in New England. "Yes," replied Paul. And for a split second, I thought I saw a light grin on Paul's face. The redcoats heaped abuse on him. "Rebel! Rabble-rouser! Scoundrel! Traitor!" they yelled, and moved closer as if to strike him. Cam shook his head and said, "These guys really hate him, don't they?" I nodded. The British commander drilled Paul with questions just inches from his face, one after the other. "Are you an express rider? What message do you carry? Where were you headed?" "I'm happy to answer your questions," said Paul. "Yes, I am an express rider." "And what message do you bring?" the British commander asked. "One that is no secret to you," said Paul Revere. He raised his voice, and with boldness and energy, replied, "Gentlemen, Hancock and Adams have already been warned. They are long gone. You've missed your aim." "What of our aim?" the officer said. "We're simply looking for deserters." Paul gave a knowing smile. "Yeah, and I'm just a silversmith selling my spoons and teapots in the middle of the night here." "What's Paul doing?" whispered Cam. "He's being very clever. He's turning the interrogation around," I said. "He's telling them that the cat's out of the bag. He's trying to let them know that the surprise is lost."
"Oh, that is genius," exclaimed Cam.
Paul stared at each of them and said, "I know better. I know what you're after and have alarmed the country all the way up from Boston." The British commanding officer was becoming more enraged by the second and clapped his pistol at Paul Revere's head. "If you do not tell the truth, I'm going to take this gun and blow your brains out." The officer gave a wicked smile. Paul glared at the man and said serenely, "I do not need a threat to make me speak the truth. I call myself a man of truth, and you have stopped me on a highway and made me a prisoner. I know not of what right. I will tell the truth, for I am not afraid." A smile crept across Paul's face as he revealed the secret plans of his enemy. In the dead of night, a column of troops left Boston by boat and crossed the Back Bay and came across at Cambridge. "Nonsense!" shouted the commander. But the men began to whisper to each other nervously. "If you value your lives, I would stay far away from Lexington. I expect 500 men there soon," Paul said. Clearly, Paul Revere was trying to lead the British away from Hancock and Adams in Lexington. A chubby British redcoat jumped when an owl hooted from a nearby tree. The British commander's eyes fell upon Cam. He reached out his hand and lifted Cam's chin until he was staring into his eyes. "Do you want to be let go, boy?" he asked.
Tell your friend to give us the answers we need. Cam bit his teeth together and stared directly into the red coat's eyes. The commander pushed Cam away. "You little fool," he exclaimed. He raised his pistol and pointed it at Paul Revere. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, a single gunshot ripped through the dark and quiet night air. My heart leapt. I pulled Cam back, away from the noise and under my arm. I couldn't bring myself to look. Did he really just shoot Paul Revere? Heaven help us. We've changed history, I thought. We killed Paul Revere. I forced myself to look back at Paul's body and found him still standing. The British commander jerked his head around and asked, "What was that?" Whew, I breathed a sigh of relief. Paul Revere was not shot. The sound had come from somewhere in the distance, from Lexington. "I told you," said Paul with a slight grin. "The colony of Massachusetts has been warned. Lexington is ready to fight. You'll all be rounded up and put in prison for life, and the country folk are not exactly happy with what you've done to them." Suddenly, the sky erupted with a thunderous explosion of musket fire. An entire volley of gunshots echoed through the trees and pasture. It sounded like loud firecrackers all going off at the same time. The soldiers' horses bucked and skidded backward as the redcoats pulled at their reins. "They're shooting at Lexington! Paul Revere speaks the truth," said a redcoat. "Like I said, I am a man of truth," Paul repeated. Finally, we could hear the distant sound of Lexington's town bell ringing wildly. "Can you hear that?" exclaimed Paul. "The people of Lexington and all the towns within the sound of those bells know that you are here. As I said before, your surprise is lost." A look of horror appeared on the British commander's face. Brilliant, I thought. Even at the peril of his own life, Paul Revere delayed 10 British soldiers and tricked them into thinking they were known to the American patriots at Lexington. "Bring me the prisoners' horses," barked the British commander. Brown Beauty was held by a nearby redcoat. The other officers scanned the area but found no sign of Liberty. The commander glared at me and asked, "Where in blazes is your horse?" "Honestly, I don't know," I said. "You are all liars. And no matter, you won't be needing it. You may keep your life, Paul Revere, but I will keep your horse. It's such a fine specimen, one worthy of a commander in the British Army, don't you think?" The commander smirked and walked over to Brown Beauty and hoisted himself onto the saddle. He slapped her hard on the neck, and she stepped back. "On your horses, men," he ordered the other redcoats. "Liberty will be devastated," I said. He had an obvious crush on Brown Beauty from the moment he saw her. The British commander jumped on Brown Beauty and kicked his spurs into her stomach. She recoiled and pulled backward. "Curse you and your patriot spies," exclaimed the commander. The 10 officers spurred their horses down the path. As they moved out, several spit at us, and one shouted, "Bloody rebels!" Paul Revere let out a breath of air and said, "Well, we fooled them, didn't we?" "Are you okay?" I asked. "I am. But now we need to get back to Lexington, one way or another. We may not have our horses, but we still have our lives and our freedom," Paul said, grabbing his shoulder and wiping some of the dirt and blood off his jacket. "How did you stay so calm? I mean, it was crazy. Those guys wanted to kill you, and you sounded totally casual, like it happens every day," Cam said. He looked at Paul with large eyes. "It is important to never let your opponent know your true feelings. I was nervous on the inside, but I knew if I showed that on my face, it would have been a different ending," Paul said. "You know, you were very brave yourself. You're a great example of a young patriot. You make us proud. Your father must be a very brave man to have raised a son with so much courage." You could see Cam stand up taller as he thought about the compliment. "Now we must hurry on. It is inevitable now. This war is about to begin, and we have much work to do," Paul said, and started to walk ahead. Under the bright moonlight, we watched the redcoats right away. My heart sank as I realized how badly they would treat Brown Beauty. Just as they started to fade in the distance, one British rider flew backward off his horse and fell to the ground.
"Did you see that?"
Cam asked, flabbergasted. I nodded, equally surprised. It looked like a branch of a tree had snapped backward and knocked the rider right off the horse. It was as if someone had pulled back the branch as far as it could go and then let it whip forward at just the right moment. We kept watching closely as Brown Beauty kicked up her back legs in celebration, raced away under the moonlight. The British commander jumped on his original horse and they all galloped away. Cam whispered, "Mr. Revere, I think Liberty just rescued Brown Beauty."
"No doubt," I replied softly. "There's a hero in all of us. It typically comes out when we're fighting to free ourselves or those we love. Unless one of our horses comes back soon, it looks like we'll be walking back to Lexington," said Paul Revere.
"With all the gunfire in Lexington, I'm pretty worried about Tommy," I said.
"I can understand your concern," said Paul Revere. "The collective shot we heard earlier sounded like the Lexington Patriots clearing their muskets. Now, if we hurry, we can get there before the King's army arrives." A flash of movement caught our eye. We turned and saw Liberty galloping in our direction. He was alone.
"What happened to Brown Beauty?" I thought.
"Liberty!" Cam shouted. Liberty slowed to a trot and then walked right up to us.
"You have a very smart horse," said Paul, reaching out to pat Liberty's neck.
"Yes," I said, and mumbled, "You don't know the half of it." I must admit I was thrilled to see Liberty. I whispered in his ear, "Where is Brown Beauty?" He shrugged his shoulders as if to suggest he didn't know. There had to be more to that story, but just wasn't the time to ask. Paul Revere picked up his pace and said, "There's a trunk at the Buckman Tavern with secret papers from John Hancock that must be moved. I need to go and secure those. I know a shortcut back to town. I recommend that you ride your horse to the Hancock-Clark house and check on Tommy. Take the main road. With all the bells still ringing, you should be safe."
"Thank you," I said sincerely. "And Godspeed, Paul Revere."
Paul gave us a warm smile before he left down the road toward Lexington.
"Be safe, fellow Sons of Liberty. Our cause is glorious."
I quickly hoisted myself up onto Liberty, and Cam joined me. Liberty turned and began a fast trot down the main road. Our return trip to Lexington took longer than I remembered, and it felt darker and colder, too. The moon had already dipped below some tall oak trees and beech trees, and all we could see was the lamplights of distant homesteads, and all we could hear was the sound of distant bells. Cam was getting tired. I think the excitement kept him awake much longer than normal, but as we rode, he leaned against my back, half asleep. I was feeling the effects of the late night and the capture, too, but I knew we had to go on. Even Liberty was oddly quiet. The only thing he said about Brown Beauty as we left the pasture was that he hoped those soldiers didn't capture her again. Well, I'm sure her well-being consumed his thoughts. As the wind gently blew through the trees and branches, bits of ice fell onto my coat and Liberty's mane. "I'm starting to think I made a huge mistake, leaving Tommy back in Lexington," I told Liberty. "I got caught up in the moment with Hancock and Adams, and I thought it'd be a great learning experience, but I fear I may have put him at risk. I shouldn't have left him there."
"If it makes you feel any better, Lexington's right around the bend," said Liberty.
The sun was still below the horizon, but its rays pushed up and over the low hills and countryside. As we rounded the bend, I still couldn't see any buildings, but I could clearly hear the Lexington bell. The sound was loud enough to wake up Cam.
"Those bells, they make a great alarm clock," he said groggily.
"Indeed," I said. "It looks like Dr. Warren's plan has worked. The bells are ringing all over the countryside." Sleepily, Cam said,
"Just like the Pilgrim's bell." And then he yawned.
"Tommy told me how the Pilgrims used the bell to warn them of danger, too."
Now, what an interesting thought. I loved how these children remembered everything. As we entered the city, I was alarmed to see hundreds of British redcoats standing in formation near the center of town, muskets in hand and ready to fight. "Liberty, take us behind that church," I said, hoping it would keep us out of the line of fire. The white church steeple rose above Lexington Green. The green was a large field, and Cam, Liberty, and I stood at the far end from where the redcoats stood. I glanced at my watch and was surprised to see it was nearly 5 o'clock in the morning. "Why are all those people standing around in front?" Cam asked. "They're blocking the road to Concord," I replied. There were not many American soldiers, perhaps 70. None of them were wearing uniforms. They looked like farmers. One was wearing work clothes and carried an old rifle. Another wore a blue hat that nearly covered his face. Many wore knee-long breeches. None stood in formation. I could not imagine how this group could take on the soldiers of the mighty British Empire. Suddenly, a single gunshot rang out straight ahead. Liberty jolted backward. As we peered again around the corner of the church, gunfire rippled through the air, and a look of pure chaos filled the streets near the Buckman Tavern. A cloud of white smoke rose in front of a couple hundred regulars. Had these British troops fired their muskets at the Lexington Patriots? It felt like the Boston Massacre all over again. The Americans ran in all directions and toward the safety of the buildings that surrounded the green and where women and children watched from their porches. A woman in the doorway of a house to our left began to scream. Scattered gunfire continued as more and more regulars shot their muskets. It sounded like the sky had cracked open as lead balls ripped through anything in their path. Frightened horses bolted forward searching for refuge. Clouds of dirty musket smoke filled the air and made it difficult to see what was happening. Suddenly Cam shouted and pointed, "Look! By that house! There's a kid on the porch right in the middle of the battle! He's gonna get shot!" "Where is he pointing?" I thought. I couldn't see the kid he was referring to. "Oh, no! Tommy!" Cam shouted. My heart sank, just like it had when Brown Beauty was taken from Paul Revere. I looked closer to where Cam was pointing. Sure enough, amid the scattering spectators was a blonde-haired boy who looked about the size of Tommy. He was standing near a house about 100 yards from the Buckman Tavern. The British redcoats were only a house or two away. A woman stood right behind him, holding his shoulder. "What on earth is Tommy doing there?" I shouted in panic over the noise. I was truly terrified, like someone had just snuck up behind me in a dark room. "Tommy!" Cam yelled, waving his hands above his head like a drowning swimmer. "Cam, get down! They're shooting!" "Should I go get him?" Liberty said in a serious tone. "Tommy! Tommy!" Cam kept screaming over and over, but the shouting, screams, and gunfire were too deafening. "Mr. Revere, we can't let anything happen to him. He's my best friend!" Desperately, Cam called out one more time as loud as his lungs allowed. "Tommy!" Tommy finally heard his name being shouted. He looked our way. It was hard to feel angry at him for disobeying me, because all I really wanted was for him to get to a safe place. Tommy shouted back, "Little Liberty is in that stable. We have to save him." He slipped out of the woman's grasp and ran through the green toward a small stable. "Cam, stay here with Liberty. Do not move. Do you hear me?" I said frantically. And all of a sudden I realized we were watching the Battle of Lexington Green. The historian in me was thrilled to see the battle I had read about over and over again, but the teacher in me was panic-stricken. "Tommy!" I yelled. "Get out of there! Run!" I couldn't believe what I had done. Why did I leave him? Tommy ran behind a large tree and used it as a shield. Tree bark splintered violently as a lead ball hit the large trunk. "We need to get him out of there," Cam shouted, and made a move to chase Tommy, but I held him back. "Cam, those are real bullets, and we are in real danger. Stay down," I said. But I couldn't take my own advice. I ducked down and started running toward the tree, the bullets, the smoke, and toward the people fleeing the redcoats. I could barely see. My eyes burned from the gunpowder, and the air smelled like burnt matches. I didn't get far, because Tommy was on the move again.
He bolted from the tree and dashed to the nearby stable. I was about to follow him when the sound of a lead ball whizzed by my ear. I fell flat in my stomach, heart pounding. I lifted my head and yelled, "Tommy, get down, get down!" Over and over I screamed above the sounds of the battle. Bits of cloth were below my feet. Shouts seemed to come from all around. I could barely make out the Buckman Tavern in front of me. It all seemed to go in slow motion, and I pushed forward toward Tommy. "Mr. Revere, I have to save Little Liberty," Tommy yelled as he reached the edge of the stable. I could see the stable was on fire. Tommy climbed through a fence and started opening the horse stalls. Like a jailbreak, the horses ran for freedom. But there was one stall still closed. Tommy raced forward on his hands and knees, trying to keep low. As Tommy lifted the latch, the stall door sprung open, and Little Liberty bounded out the door like a playful puppy. The pony looked oblivious to the battle. Tommy hopped onto the back of Little Liberty and nudged the pony forward. Together, they raced out of the burning stable and toward the white church. The redcoats were reloading their muskets. Bang! A shot fired from a musket to my left. I was close enough to see the puff of smoke lift from the gun. Suddenly, the smoke stopped in midair. The redcoat holding the musket stood like a statue in a wax museum. The British Army, the Lexington Patriots, the spectators and horses, and even Tommy's pony had frozen in time. It looked like a giant game of freeze tag, and everyone had been tagged except Tommy. He sat on top of Little Liberty, who was stopped in mid-gallop, his tongue halfway out of his mouth like he'd licked an icy pole. "What just happened?" Cam asked. "We don't have much time, literally," said Liberty as we all rushed toward Tommy. "I can hold off time only until I blink again," he warned. Within seconds, we were at Tommy's side. Inches from his back was a lead ball suspended in the air. "Whoa, am I glad to see you guys," said Tommy, caught up in the moment. Cam reached out to grab the lead ball, but he couldn't pull it from its midair flight. "It's stuck," Cam said. "It won't move an inch." "That's because it's frozen in time," Liberty said quickly. I clarified. "As soon as Liberty blinks, everything will continue on its course through time. We are not from this time period, so we're not affected by Liberty's time control." "Enough talking. Just save Tommy," Liberty shouted. "I can't hold this much longer." "Tommy, jump on Liberty's back," I shouted. "No, I am not leaving Little Liberty," exclaimed Tommy. "Then lean over to your left," I said, tugging on his shirt. "Can you see the trajectory of that lead ball?" "Eyes burning, can't hold, gonna blink," warned Liberty. Tommy turned his head and glanced at the lead ball and then looked over at the regular who shot it. "Yeah, I see it." "Good," I shouted. "Just lean like that, you'll be fine. When time starts again, race to the church." Suddenly, the world exploded in surround sound. As Little Liberty bounced forward, the momentum raised Tommy a little higher. I had not taken that into consideration, and the lead ball ripped through the side of Tommy's coat sleeve. Tommy grimaced and gritted his teeth as Little Liberty and Big Liberty raced side by side until we found ourselves sheltered behind the church again. A look of disbelief was on Tommy's face. "I think I was shot," he said, wincing in pain. "But at least Little Liberty's safe." I quickly examined the wound. "It only grazed your skin. You're extremely lucky, Tommy. You could have been really hurt or worse," I said. "It is unacceptable. You didn't do as I told you. You were supposed to stay with Hancock and Adams away from the battle at the Hancock-Clark house. What were you thinking?" "I wasn't, Mr. Revere. I'm so sorry," Tommy said with his head down. "Tommy, you almost made me wet my pants." "You gotta be more careful," Cam said, shaking his head. "It's just that, when you guys didn't come back, I thought you'd been captured, and I got worried. I guess I forgot about our agreement, and I followed some of the neighbors to the loud sounds." "Tommy, I'm angry with you right now because I care about you and your safety very much. From now on, you must listen to me. Understood?" Liberty snorted. "And so you decided to play Superman. For the record, you're not faster than a speeding bullet." "I know, Liberty," Tommy said, his head still down. "But when the British Army arrived, everything got crazy. I felt like I was lost in a huge mall filled with strangers. The British were yelling and the Americans were yelling, and it got really scary. And then the first gunshot rang out, and everyone just started running everywhere.
I am sorry I let this happen, I said. Little Liberty nickered and licked Tommy's face.
Did that pony just lick you? Said Liberty. Seriously, someone's got to teach him proper pony etiquette.
I couldn't help but smile. I guess you have someone who's happy that you were there in his hour of need. Little Liberty was still licking Tommy's smiling face. Tommy lowered his voice and asked, "What's up with Cam?" I turned and noticed Cam staring out at the battlefield. His brow was furrowed, his eyes were dazed, and his lips were barely moving. He carried a deep sadness on his face. I walked over to him and tenderly said, "Cam, I know this has been a crazy day, but you were unbelievably brave. I am so proud of you." I put my hand on his shoulder. Reverently, Cam replied, "I count at least a half dozen Lexington men lying on the ground. They're not moving." In the distance, families and loved ones cried as they stood above their fathers, husbands, and sons. Many soldiers were badly wounded, and others looked beyond help. "Cam, war is a horrible thing. I'm sorry you had to see this kind of suffering," I said solemnly. "It was one of those times when you don't have the right words, and no matter what you say, it won't make it easier." "It's time for us to go home," I said, taking Cam's arm to turn him around. It was now dawn, and the sun had peeked over the rolling hills. We were all a bit stunned and exhausted after everything we had just seen. I knew the kids needed a good meal, warm shower, and time to think about everything they'd been through. This was a day they weren't soon to forget. After Liberty told Little Liberty he'd be back to visit him soon, the boys climbed up onto Liberty's saddle, and he quietly said, "Rush, rush, rushing from history." The portal opened and swirled. As we left, I looked back to see Little Liberty chomping on some grass, unaware of the critical moment in history we had all just witnessed. Chapter 6. After our last adventure, I was relieved to be back in modern day. I wondered, though, what happened to Paul Revere. We had lost him after the Battle of Lexington. So I looked through my history books and discovered that he made it back to Lexington and hid John Hancock's secret trunk. Whew, boy, I was happy with the news. As I walked across the military base toward a large green field, Cam called over to me and said, "Thanks for coming, Mr. Revere." He was standing with Tommy and Freedom at the edge of what looked like a large soccer field. The grass had been recently cut, and there were spectators lined up on either side. I was wondering where they came from. "I'm glad you invited me. I wouldn't miss it," I said as I walked across the lawn to greet them. "Hi, Mr. Revere. Is Liberty here?" Tommy asked, his eyes scanned left and right. "No," Freedom replied for me. "I don't sense his..." "Oh, wait, I found him," Freedom smiled. "He says he's at a horse spa recovering from his trip to Boston to Lexington." "He's right about that," I replied a little guiltily. "Liberty did all the running and jumping. His legs were pretty tired and sore after the trip." "Hey, losers," said Billy, who stood with about a dozen other kids about 10 yards away. His hands were on his hips with his big chest out, and they all wore matching red T-shirts with the words "Fear the Billy" printed in white. "Ah, yes, I remembered Billy the Bully, and I must say I was not particularly happy to see him. First a fistfight, then taunting Cam in the gym. Not a pleasant young man. I was not exactly sure, but it looked like the game was dodgeball." "Is this all you've got on your team?" Billy scoffed. "Couldn't you get any more losers to join you?" The chubby boy named Edward, known as Ed, whom Cam had first protected, ran onto the field toward Cam's team. He tripped on his shoelaces and went down face first.
Wobbling, he pushed himself to his knees, awkwardly stood up, and rushed over to his three teammates.
"I made it, Cam," said Ed. "Sorry I'm late. I had to finish my calculus homework."
"Hey, great! You got Fatty the Nerd with you! Good luck!" Billy taunted.
The rest of the kids on Billy's team laughed.
"Looks can be deceiving, Billy. We may look like underdogs, but we'll put up a fight."
Billy grabbed his stomach and laughed.
"More like the underpants!" His team laughed again. "Hey, Ed, glad you could make it," Cam said, not very convincingly.
He searched the rest of the field for other latecomers. Nope, it looked like it would only be the four of them against the bully and his large crew. Things were not looking good. Billy kept trash-talking as he yelled, "Hope you have a team doctor. You're going to need one." Cam yelled back,
"Yeah, we have a doctor. His name is Dr. Warren."
Cam and Freedom started laughing quietly.
Ed asked, "Did I miss something?"
Billy shouted,
"Never heard of him. Must be the guy who changes your diapers."
Billy laughed as if he were hilarious.
"Nope," replied Cam. "The only diaper on this field is the one you're wearing."
Cam high-fived his laughing teammates.
"You won't be laughing for long," Billy said. "Look at us. We're bigger, stronger, and faster than you. And we totally have you outnumbered. Face it, you have zero chance of winning."
Cam shot back. "Oh, yeah? Well, Dr. Warren thinks we have a chance. You can call him Dr. Doom." That seemed to shut Billy up.
Freedom nudged Cam and whispered, "I thought you said you invited more friends."